going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
He's had his moments where the turnovers, you go, whoa, that you can't make that mistake. But he's not a point guard. So what do you expect? Asking Luke Kennard to be a point guard when he's never really been a point guard. That's a hard ask. But that's just the way the roster was, and you accept it, and you try to accept your roles. So I think that's part of the problem. And then teams will, knowing that, what are you going to do? You're going to deny the ball to the one guy who can make a play that has the handles to do it, and that's Ja Morant. So now you got other guys who aren't as comfortable handling the ball. And if I'm a defensive coach at that point, I'm like, double that immediately. Double it immediately, because it's going to be a reaction rather than an instinct to look for the double, to pass out of the double team. But by that time, you're in a bad spot.
Eric, good luck tonight. And get Ja an oxygen tank, because I think we need him like 44 minutes tonight.
I mean, look, he said he'd play as many as he could. But as Tuomas said, he said, they are human beings and they do need some rest, but I think you're going to see heavy minutes, because if tonight doesn't go well, it's
curtains, it's baby.
Yeah,
it's curtains. All right, good luck tonight. Curtain.
All right, buddy. Thanks, man.
That is, of course, Eric Astine. You can hear pregame tonight, 8 p.m. tip off at 8:30. Want to also remind you that if you're thinking about getting engaged, go see my friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. I'm not just endorsing them. I myself am a customer. It's where we got my wife's engagement ring. And you should go do so yourself. Why? Because at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you get more choices. They have a large collection of both natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They can even make you a custom-made engagement ring, and you can do so with peace of mind because they have the meant-to-be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with your custom-made engagement ring, you have a full 365 days to return it, no questions asked. You can have it your way at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Every designer diamond engagement ring mounting is fully customizable to accommodate the center diamond size and shape of your choice. Plus, you can choose from yellow, white, rose gold, or even platinum. They also have free ring sizing for life. And don't forget about their free jewelry spa service for life. They will make your piece of jewelry look like the day that you got it. Great financing options also over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can ask her now and pay later with financing like 24 months deferred interest, or you can take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. With over 4 decades of experience in the jewelry business, Robert Irwin Jewelers has become a trusted name known for generations of families. 5 locations, including Perkins Extended in East Memphis, the Bartlett Town Center, the Southlake Center down in South Haven, as well as 2 locations in Little Rock. Bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can also shop online at rijewelers.com. We come back, we get into the list. Let's talk some Tiger basketball recruiting, a little bit more news on that front. Also, want to get into a interesting story from the University of Kentucky and how this might apply to the future of college athletics. We're going to talk about that with Cobb next, right here on Jeff Rett and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. George, I got a trivia question for you. Who inducted Genesis into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I feel like I should know this.
It's not a musician.
It's not?
No.
Okay, then no, I don't
have Robin that. Williams. Did a big Phil Collins impression. When, yeah, it was fabulous. Want to also remind people that Zen Sports is launching their brand new VIP Play app later this month. And you're going to want to get a part of it because they're going to have over 200 sports leagues included, and you're going to be able to parlay just about all of them. I'll also be having my own same game parlays featured, as will many of your other favorite sports talk hosts throughout the state. For more information, head to zensports.com/VIP play, and you can also claim an early welcome bonus offer on VIP play when it launches in the state later this month. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older to gamble. And let's get into the list. Aaron Bradshaw. All right, Cobb. I guess the Tigers are going to see if the Big Ten Big to Memphis pipeline continues. They're adding Aaron Bradshaw from Ohio State. I believe he averaged, 6.5? I think it was 6 points last year, 2.7 rebounds, also had 14 blocks and 16 steals. He was a sophomore last year, shooting 49% from the field. I mean, to me, this is one of those types of ads that make sense to me.
Oh, where, it's a tremendous addition.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going to be fascinating to see, if I'm Aaron Bradshaw, I'm sitting around thinking, okay, if Dane Danger gets eligible, my role is not going to be maybe not even close to what it could be if he's not eligible. If Dane Danger is not eligible, I mean, hello, Aaron Bradshaw, 26, 27 minutes a game, potentially a double-figure scorer, a guy that could really pop as one of the better rim protectors in the AAC. But if Danger is eligible, it's sort of a C-say Danger situation, but Danger's got a huge leg up in the sense that, like, how good he was down the stretch, he's gonna go into the season commanding a massive, massive role. And I don't know if those two guys can be on the court necessarily at the same time. So I am a little bit fascinated about how all that plays out. But in the meantime, you don't know about Dane Danger, so you have to go out and get somebody with size. And, man, what a huge pickup. Like, he's a former McDonald's All-American. Started at Kentucky, played last season at Ohio State. He's never had a massive role, but clearly a guy with a lot of talent. He's 7 feet. He's athletic. He's not a post-up guy, but he's a lob threat. He's a really good defender. I think it's a great ad.
So you had alerted me this. Field of 68, of course, John Martin does some work for them. They posted up who was the biggest loser or the biggest portal loser this cycle. And Jeff Goodman responded, I think, Memphis is a pretty easy answer here. And according to Goodman, the biggest losers in the portal were Memphis, Arizona, Arizona State, Cal, Alabama, USC, UAB, Drexel, Sam Houston State, and then he also included Robbie Hummel. I can understand the idea of you had an All-American, you lost him, and I'm not saying that that's not a loss. But when I look at what they've been adding, like, there's no way to me that you can say, like, this is a bad roster.
Well, UAB is a bigger loser because, yeah, they lost Yaxel, you lost PJ, okay, equal, whatever. Maybe a bigger loss for Memphis given how good PJ Haggerty was. But to your point, like, when you look at what your boy AK has been adding back, it's kind of like crickets right now, man. Like, they got Jacob Meyer from DePaul, and that's, like, pretty much the only guy at this point that UAB has added. Meanwhile, Memphis, like, has the bones and the structure of a good roster coming together. So, I mean, yeah, like, they're definitely still scrambling to try to make up for PJ's departure, but they're doing a better job of that than some of these other teams that he has listed as losers.
Yeah, also, Sirius, we're thinking, praying for you. Elijah Arenas was in a massive car crash today, and I think the latest report I saw is they put him in a medically induced coma. He, of course, is the son of Gilbert Arenas. He's a 5-star, signed with USC. Like, that is, holy cow, life-changing right before your
driving
eyes.
Driving a cyber truck, too. And I did see something somewhat encouraging that basically they put him in the coma just mainly due to smoke inhalation, and maybe that it wasn't because there were a lot of known, at this point, internal injuries. So maybe it's, like, I'm not a doctor. But hopefully if it's something due to the smoke inhalation, like, that's something he can recover from.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I do think that this is a legitimate issue for Memphis moving forward. If the idea is going to be they're supposed to be roster building at the same level that the top 15 in the sport is, I don't know if that's as long as the rules are as such. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, it's crazy seeing the comments from Ed Scott and you know, the local beat reporters would have a more thorough understanding of sort of what he said, and they were there for the entirety of what he said. But the snippets that I've seen, you know, Jeffrey, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of, I think for the first time that I've seen acknowledging publicly that, hey, we're not at that full 20.5
yeah.
rev share figure that you're seeing from the high major schools. And that's sort of the reality that we knew was going to be the case, but then it's sort of a bummer when you see it, but it helps it makes sense. It puts into context why you're losing to PJ Haggerty, because not only is Memphis worried about basketball, which we know is very important, but you're trying to bankroll a really competitive football roster right now. And all across the country, we're seeing programs like North Carolina with historically strong basketball that are going all in on football because they know football is their ticket to whatever's next in college sports. And so it's like, you know, it's great to have both these programs thriving if you're Memphis, but at the same time, it's like there's only so much to go around. And I think Penny's doing a good job. I think he's doing a good job putting together a roster. He's able to get Doug McDaniel. I love this dude, Mr. Dean, that they've been talking to on Zoom from USC Upstate. I mean, he's only going to be a sophomore, but man, he was a total stud at Upstate as a freshman, like a dog defender, a lot of length, a lot of athleticism. I mean, I still think there's a chance for this Memphis roster to come out of the fire with, so let's say, 11 scholarship guys, all of whom are kind of like borderline, or maybe even not even borderline, but like clearly high major caliber guys.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way that when I saw all the comments, it didn't surprise me, but I think you're right. It was the first public acknowledgement. Like, there's been a lot of, in this universe, we want to participate in it, whatnot. But it was like the first time there was an admission out loud of, listen, we're not at the full level. And it's very obvious to me what they are. It's like they are, in terms of football and basketball, they're as competitive as anyone in the G5. And, you know, he kept saying, well, we're up there with some P4s too. But this is something you and I have talked about. It's one of those things that kind of reads better. There's a real problem with some of these schools in the ACC and some of these schools in the Big 12 that they're really, like, in this, if this is the rev share world, like, they're going to struggle to get there. Like, I don't know. I guess I just kind of look at it in these terms where if the expectation is going to be that Penny Hardaway is got this team as a top 15 team every single year, I'm not sure that's a fair standard. Like, I think what is going to be fair is I think you should hold them to the same standard that, honestly, like, that I think about, like, with St. Mary's. Like, they should, St. Mary's at least has Gonzaga in the league, although they're moving now. But, like, you have the best job in the conference. You should win the conference almost every year. You should be a tournament team. But you're probably going to be, in this roster world, you're probably going to be somewhere that 7 to 11 seed range. And so, like, you're never going to be favored to get into the second weekend. That doesn't mean that that shouldn't be the standard. You shouldn't try to reach for that. But, like, I almost think as good of a year as this was, it kind of, like, weirdly backfired against Penny, where this was finally the year where I felt like the program was a grown-up. You didn't hear about off-court issues, locker room issues. Yeah, they lost a few games. I don't expect you to go perfect. They're 31-5. They win the league. They win the tournament, the conference tournament. And yeah, they got to an NCAA tournament game without their starting and backup point guard. It didn't go well. But just to see the reaction and whatnot, it just was a reminder to me, like, you can tell people here's the reality, but they're just not going to change their standards. And, like, that's my actual fear, is that I think maybe for a little bit, Penny probably had a little too much grace. I feel like now it's going to kind of flip-flop in reverse, where it's like, I'm just not sure the standard that the fan base has is actually, like, reasonable, or even in the ballpark of reasonable.
The fault line has emerged. The chasm is growing. Memphis is on the wrong side of the line. And they want to be compared to the programs. The fans want Memphis to be compared to and be competitive with the programs that are on the other side of that widening fault line. And the fact is, they're just the best team, the most well-equipped program on the wrong side of it. So I think the lane for Penny and the comp to St. Mary's is good. It's obviously different in terms of like the style of play.
Sure.
But Memphis can kind of be what like McNeese was under Will Wade, like a haven for guys who are looking for a chance to prove themselves. And no small coincidence as they get Sincere Parker, who was at McNeese.
Yeah.
You go and get players who are looking for an opportunity or bounce down guys who still have a lot of talent, i.e. and Aaron Bradshaw. Zachary Davis, a guy at South Carolina who was just a role player, maybe has a chance to come and play a bigger role for you now. Quante Berry, somebody who from the AAC All-Stars who's going to take the Kendrick Davis, P.J. Haggerty path and then go to play for Memphis, same as Nick Jourdain, more of a Nick Jourdain level of player, caliber of player. That's what Memphis is going to have to be. And then the secret sauce to all of that is Penny Hardaway taking a collection of talent, guys who can play, and then molding them into a good team. That's the challenge. Because I've never doubted, and still don't, even after losing P.J. Haggerty, Penny Hardaway's ability to put together a roster to amass and collect talent. It's just the ability then to go and form that talent into a cohesive team. For example, if you were to land a Doug McDaniel, who's been a guy at Michigan and Kansas State with the ball in his hands quite a bit, who's interested in your program, well, now you bring him in, you kind of got to make it work and figure out that hierarchy and all those sorts of things, which at some points in the past has been a struggle. When they've had a Kendrick Davis or they've had a P.J. Haggerty and they've had the clear alpha, that's when they've been at their best. Now you go into next season, maybe this team, if it doesn't get Dane Danger back, more a collection of talent where you got to figure out the hierarchy. If he can thrive in that, then boy, I mean, they're going to be, as you mentioned, like they're in the NCAA tournament on an annual basis. But that's the challenge now is for Penny to take the talent that he's going to be able to amass and then sort of form it and build it and make it into something coherent and cohesive that really works and pops and can get you to 25, 26, 27 wins before Selection Sunday.
Judge Claudia Wilkin. All right, Cobb. A federal judge told the NCAA and its members Wednesday that she would not approve the multi-billion-dollar antitrust settlement that is expected to reshape the business of college sports unless they change a proposed policy for limiting roster sizes. Judge Claudia Wilkin said the NCAA's insistence on immediate implementing roster limits would cause some college athletes to lose their spot on their current teams and that she would not approve a settlement that would cause harm to some members of the plaintiff's case. She wrote that she did not have issues with any other parts of the proposed settlement and that the court, quote, tentatively finds it can grant final approval to the remainder of the settlement if the roster limit issues are resolved. She then continued to give them 14 days to come up with a solution. If they did not come up with a solution, it's back to square one. So here are a couple of the questions I have for you. Number one, do we think there's going to be an acceptance from the school's side and they grandfather in? Because I think she said that she would accept grandfathering in but basically what I'm curious about is how likely is it that the schools will actually change the stance?
So they're trying to save money right now because the house settlement, it's going to drastically reduce the number of roster spots for a lot of these programs, in particular your non-revenue sports. And so what the judge, what the Honorable Miss Claudia is trying to do here is say, okay, we're down with eliminating some of the roster spots, but we don't want active athletes to have their scholarships revoked and to essentially be cut. But the schools are saying, we need that to happen now because we're on the hook for $20.5 million. And if we're having to scholarship 500 student athletes, that's not going to be financially practical for us in the 25, 26 year. And so, but here's the thing, man. If they don't back off of this, if the schools say, no, like we want the roster sizes that are in the settlement to be this immediately and forget grandfathering in the current players, and then she says, okay, well, I'm not approving the settlement. You brought this up. What then becomes of all this money that's been promised to the players as a part of the revenue sharing structure? Because if the settlement doesn't pass, then all the deals and the contracts that have been agreed to based on the revenue sharing structure, they all go out the window because the revenue sharing structure won't be implemented. And so that's why this house settlement is so important. It's the framework and the infrastructure by which every NIL deal is getting done right now.
Well, there's a couple of things that you said there. Number one, kind of poking around the last day, Cobb, this seems to be like it's a non-starter for the schools. So then my question is, okay, if they don't get this settled in the next 2 weeks, is this thing going to trial?
That would be a nightmare.
Because, like, that's the other, so it's like, does the settlement, like, if it doesn't, does it go to trial, and then, like, you're going to get, you're spending all this money. Like, it seems to me that the schools would be spending the money taking this thing to trial that they could possibly save just a scholarship for 3 years or whatever, you know.
Well, and they risk just going totally bankrupt if the trial goes to completion and the judge or the jury rules against the NCAA and rules in favor of House, and then all of a sudden these schools are bankrupt with all the back pay to thousands of athletes. And so the terms of I think what we're seeing right now is classic negotiating. I think it's a situation where, you know, the schools are, and just as the same as you would see in any
sure.
settlement discussion, the sides are going to go back and forth. Eventually, I think they'll come to a resolution because there's so much riding on it. I mean, you've got rosters that have been built for this next season around the revenue sharing structure, and these schools can't risk that structure not going into place, and then all of a sudden their checks aren't clearing, and all of a sudden it's just mass chaos. I think that's
side
of it.
Let's say that. Because I do think you're right. I think it is a negotiation. The only hesitancy that I have, though, is it was brought up during, I don't know, were they hearings? What were the preliminary things where they were debating the issues?
Yeah, right. Like the judge was reviewing the settlement in the presence of the attorneys, you know, for both sides, right?
It was brought up that this is a real problem. And they knew that it was a real problem. And so my fear is, This seems to be like an issue that's non-negotiable from the school side for the reasons that you said, like, we can't pay it. So let's say that they can't come to a resolution in 2 weeks. Is the whole settlement thrown out? Does this go to trial? And more importantly, I think seems obvious to me that a lot of kids right now are being promised money based on revenue sharing. Are they just going to still share the revenue even if they don't have the agreement? Or is this going to be a situation where you can't pay, like, can you legally pay these people based on, like, can you share revenue if you don't have some framework? Like,
well, they'll get a stay on the resolution, and it'll kind of go into a holding pattern. And what'll happen is a lot of your track and field and your swimming and diving and your archeries and your rowers, they're going to be looking towards the fall semester, trying to sign up for classes, and they're going to say, you know what, it's not worth it. Like, I don't even know if I'm going to have a spot on the roster at this school. I'm just going to go home and enroll at my local college, or I'm just going to try to get on an academic scholarship. And, you know, I think the NCAA or the NCAA institutions, right, are probably going to try to play that game. Well, we'll just kind of ride out the clock on this and let a lot of these players who we would have to scholarship in these non-revenue sports, we'll just kind of let them decide to go and do other things. And hopefully that'll get our numbers down. And then, you know, then if we have to agree to the terms, then maybe we're only paying for half as many scholarships as opposed to trying to fill out, you know, the grandfather clause where, you know, you're essentially the same old scholarship limits, right? So where you're still doing 30 swimming and diving instead of 17, right? So if you can get that down to 20, 21, 22, maybe it becomes more affordable.
Yeah, and then the other aspect of this is Steve Berkowitz over from USA Today writes that Kentucky is reorganizing its athletic department. So essentially, basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to separate athletics and essentially like have it operate like you would the medical school. Like, I'm guessing that's what other schools are going to do because, like, as you point out, like, at some point, it feels like that's all in preparation of paying the athletes.
Right. Yeah, this is fascinating. This is really interesting. Like, the University of Kentucky Athletic Department won't be under the umbrella of the university.
Yeah.
Like, the athletic director in this scenario would no longer answer to the chancellor of the university or the board of the trustees. which could give them a lot of flexibility to pursue things that aren't necessarily in line with the educational mission of a university. Like, if you want to have a bunch of third party events at your facilities, like, that's a way to recoup some of the lost revenue in the player empowerment era. Like, I think that's what this frees them up to do, is to be way more creative. And heck, you hear a lot about the infusion of private equity. I think this could open the door for that, because you might have a chance for a board of trustees that are like, we don't want this private equity associated with something that's awesome, a part of our university. But if it's associated with a third party that's running your athletics, then maybe that's the way to do it.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program. We'll talk to him next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Jason Smith is, of course, the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929. Jason, did you take anything from Ed Scott's comments that he made last night for the Bird family's fundraiser?
In terms of takes and was there anything major? Well, I agree with you guys that we kind of got a number there, a halfway point that he expects to reach. You know, he kind of talked about it and generalizing beforehand. And said, look, and nobody expected it. Memphis is not going to be able to do the 20.5 that the power schools can do. But, you know, where it was going to come in was always the question. And up until this point, he hadn't really been able to say. So to be able to say, you know, we expect to be about halfway there, you know, to put yourself about $10 million, it at least gives us a baseline for where we think things will be. It's especially maybe, and Jeffrey, I'll see if you – in light of – a time where we're watching PJ Haggerty walk away because you don't have enough money on the basketball side. I did think it was interesting that the AD of, as far as I know, the only Group of Five program that had a top 25 basketball and football program at the end of the year, that he was really, he was talking about the great position they're in, even though, again, they are priced out, it appears, and topped out with a budget perhaps of $5 million, somewhere between 4 and 5 in basketball. He still painted a picture, and, you know, the discussion wasn't all football, but the picture was, look, you know, we're gonna have either the most or and I realize, you know, we're talking revenue sharing, we're talking NIL, but we're talking money and how you're gonna be able to resource these programs and get good players. And so back to it. He's talking about, we're going to have $10.5 million. It's going to be the most or at the top of the list of G5 schools. Okay, that's got me competing with Boise State on the football side, hopefully for a Group of Five playoff spot, but certainly to be the best thing outside the Group of Five to outwin Tulane. You know, if you've got more money and to be able to stay there. And then he mentioned, you know, even with this money, to be able to, in the revenue share part of things, will be in the you know, midway through, you know, at least ahead of some Power Four schools. So my point is, while on one side it feels like you have less, Jeffrey, if there is a, you know, if I had a larger take off this, sort of a, man, let me take a step back here, because we've been hearing it. I mean, John's been, you know, pointing out how everybody else's money is changing ahead of revenue sharing. Yours in basketball is not, at least not to this point. And we have the evidence, because P.J. Haggerty got in the transfer portal a few days before the thing, before he had to, before at least there's a deadline to get in. And so it, to hear how good things were overall, but we know there are still severe limitations. Clearly, if you can't keep a second-team AP All-American on a team that he won on, that made the tournament, won its conference, tournament title, well, you clearly still have some right there in our face. You clearly have some restrictions. So it ought, what it does, Jeffrey, is take me back inevitably to that conversation of, okay, well, if you've got all this in revenue sharing, you're getting $5 million a year from Fred Smith, that we know the majority of which is earmarked for football. Has, again, we've discussed it, has the price to compete at a national level for Memphis basketball become too much? And what you're doing is investing these resources in football in a stadium that you now own, you know, and hopefully having a good product, a hot product that's competing with Boise State, maybe ahead of them by the time 28, 29, and 30 roll around. They're having the conversations about new media rights deals, and it's leading to realignment, as most suspect is going to happen. And so maybe that's what we're seeing, but what I feel coming off of it is, okay, they're going to be – Ryan's got everything he needs. Penny Hardaway, well, if he did, you'd be retaining P.J. Haggerty. So that's sort
yeah,
of my, that's sort
I,
of my
I,
feel
I think
on
it's,
that.
I think it's fair to say this. And
two,
Cobb,
two different worlds kind of that we're talking about there.
Cobb, feel free to disagree. It seems to me like Memphis in basketball, they don't have the money to go be top 25, 20 to 25, because it seems like that's priced them out.
Not if you want to be good at football, too.
But it does seem to me like if you're at this, like let's just say for kicks and giggles, they have $4.5 million. Let's just use the number for basketball.
Yeah.
Like that's enough to buy a tournament team.
Sure,
but,
sure
it's, but you're not
but
buying
what that
the
gets
like
you now.
That's
yes,
what I'm saying.
What
so
that would get you in an AAC winning it. Sure, probably still would. But if that's not getting you anything higher than an 8 or 9 seed,
yeah.
which in most years, again, you're not going 10-3 most years against the fourth toughest non-conference schedule in the country. That's just most years.
Yeah, I mean, and especially
and
have it the roster, have the resume 100%. Hold up like it did.
And
yes.
So it's very likely my point would be that the AAC winner, you know, going forward, there's a good chance. I mean, AK hadn't, you know, I know he's your guy. You know, we're still waiting on UAB to get consistent with it. Now, we were saying that about Penny Hardaway.
Sure.
So the point being, there's nothing there. And so, and back to that, we're just talking about, you know, ceilings on the investments here. And back to the ceiling on basketball. Yeah, you can win the AAC. You can be maybe a top 25 program in doing so. But what's it going to do for you in terms of big payoff with tournament? You just saw a team that was nationally ranked all season long. I keep going back to it because I always thought, as a guy who covered the program 6 years, grew up watching it, loving it, whatever else, that if you put a ranked team in FedEx Forum, right, or before this program, if you put a ranked team in there most of the season, you would have more than 6,500 actual butts in seats. Penny had a ranked team. He had his best season. He won. He did what he's supposed to do in terms of winning the conference title because he was picked 2. He finishes 1, and he won the regular. And he won the conference tournament title. And so, but if my only payoff to Jeffrey is going to be an 8 or 9 seed and likely a tough road to that Sweet 16, more importantly, staying nationally competitive, right, trying to win a national championship, then am I not better served to invest in a football side that now? In addition to controlling the building and all the revenue streams I've got going there, especially if I've got a hot product, I mean, it's not just the Group of Five seat that you've got at the playoff table right now, because that might not always be there. But it's the idea that we can get hot. We can get to where Boise is if we're serious about this and holding Ryan to a different standard, you know, a standard of conference title or bust when you have the most, is not the return on investment and the ceiling now higher on that side, particularly when you consider the history that with basketball as the front porch, it has never gotten you the call up to the big leagues. You've cleaned it up. You've had it nationally relevant and everything else, and yet they have Big East won't even pick up the phone. And so back to it, is this not now? Can you afford to not make the move again? Like with Louisville all those years back when they leave you, they decide we're going in on foot, you know, on football, and they leave. Can you afford not to do this again? You may have, Jeffrey, to sort of bottom line this, been pushed to a point where you don't have a choice. Because, again, for what the historic expectations are of the basketball program, I'm not sure you can afford them anymore. And you're not going to change this fan base's sort of expectations of it, telling them, well, we've got less money. What you can do is maybe capitalize on this newly renovated building that's going to have 40 to 45,000 in it if you can get the thing hot. And maybe, again, competing with Boise State for Group of Five playoff spots, but more importantly, having a new face, one that you've invested in, one that a good coach, whether it's Ryan Silverfield or this one, has gotten this thing hot. And, man, that brand is returning more than you can get at this price in college basketball for Memphis.
So
the sad reality, I was going to say, I mean, is you kind of got to put basketball to a certain extent on the back burner relative
That's
to the
I'm
historical.
Saying.
Well, I guess so. Let me jump in here, because this is something, Jason, you might have a better sense of. I am not clear
like Memphis kind of operates as there are people that give money to basketball and there are people that give money to football. Mm-hmm. Does it all go to one big pot? Because like I can envision a scenario because I think logically what you just said makes sense to me. But what if it's, well, this money was earmarked for basketball and we can't touch that? Like, you do start to, that's when you'll see the inevitable turf war inside the department.
Oh, I mean, I think it's already happening.
Sure.
If you've got Penny Hardaway feeling any sort of he's already got less, hell, I would already be feeling a certain kind of way. And again, it's out of his control about not being able to retain PJ. I'm the one that helped turn him into an AP All-American. We had a great season. What do you mean it's out of my hands? I can't pay this guy. Like, there's a frustration in that. And so that you know, and right now, Ryan Silverfield has got what he needs to be able to bring in Elijah Herring's, Mario Anderson's from the SEC, win enough games in the AAC that college football playoff appearance is just, it's worth more to you. And more importantly, so is the chance in 5 years maybe to get pulled up. Now, listen, the turf war has already, if Penny any kind of way feels that way, you're taking some from me or not giving me more when I'm coming off my best season, at least regular season-wise, at least up until the NCAA tournament, and giving more to football. I mean, Penny came up in this history. Penny made the history as a player. That, just like for many of the fans, generational, that have gone back for years, that's what they know. They can't see a Memphis football athletic department's got, a Memphis athletic department's got football as the face. So a turf war for sure, but and it's something that's, listen, football was saying this about basketball when Bill, when they were getting their brand new facility and football was still waiting on theirs. They had been waiting for years. Tommy had said, you got to invest. The coaches were like, when are we getting ours? And so what's happened is it's flipped, Jeffrey, where
sure.
The resentment could very easily be, if you decide to invest this way, go this route, the resentment's probably going to be, and understandably so, back the other way, going from basketball to football, because they've decided ultimately in this world of college athletics, for us to compete at the highest level we can, we have to maximize what we have on the football side, because the maximization of the basketball side has not paid off in a way that's still putting 12,000 to 15,000 to 16,000 butts in seats in a way that, we could bank on when you had better attendance than the Grizzlies down there. So those days are likely done forever. And this is probably a choice you're going to have to make. What becomes of the basketball program, and if it's ever the same, is the question. Because there's a good chance it's not, if you're not going above $5 million, brother. But I mean, Cobb can tell us there's going to be a bunch with $10 million plus this year.
Oh,
I mean, you had power fours going from 2 to 6. They got more. I mean, power fours that were middling programs going from 2 to 6. I mean, all of a sudden they got money to offer PJ. You don't, because I mean, it's gotten to a point where, again, when you parallel it with what the expectations have been historically, it's just, it might be out of Penny's hands at this point. I've phrased it that way. It won't matter how good a coach he's become or becomes. You get priced out. And in basketball, Memphis might be.
I would just bottom line it like this. Like, if they've decided football is the vehicle to take them to the promised land, then eventually if they get there, basketball gets to live there too. But in the meantime, it kind of stinks. Realizing that, hey, maybe we're sort of second fiddle.
Call that. I mean, Cobb, that's a great call. That it can then, if you get to something, whether it's a blown up ACC or whatever, you're not going to be in the freaking big. You're not going to be in the SEC. You're probably not going to be in the Big 12. But if it's something else, I mean, in within some sort of power structure that's not this, it's absolutely better. That actually picks basketball up. It doesn't feel like basketball at this point. Again, I'd point to, we had a ranked team all year long. Can be that for you where it pulls football up. Right to that better conference. This is where you've historically missed, and I put it that way, Cobb. I don't think they can afford to not invest in it at this crossroads to pick football here. And I'm the guy that, dude, I would not have this job at 92.9 if I wasn't the Memphis basketball beat writer. That's how coveted those jobs have been. And listen, if times have changed at the newspaper, where they've gotten the Grizzlies. We've got two beat writers on everything now. But, Cobb, you know where I'm going with this, man. I mean, that job, whether it was DeCourcy, whether it was Walken, whether it was Gary Parrish, it was coveted because it was, everybody was so interested. They were the pro team for years, and generations came up like that. I would not be at 92.9 if I had not covered the Tigers. That's how ingrained it is in this city's sports fabric. What we're saying, this shift, This rips the fabric up. Because much of, again, this city's sports history has been associated with that program's two national championship appearances and the Final Four in, what, 85. And so, for a lot of people, they've already cut this comment. They're crazy. You know, football, I've seen them try to do it. It ain't going to work. What do you mean, Baz? You're going to take more from some of them has already tuned it out. But I don't think, whether it's Ed Scott or any athletic director in that chair for Memphis at this point, I don't think you can afford to not shift in some way. Sure, you want to give pity all you can. But it feels like you got to go all in on football while these opportunities and realignment, not possible. Everybody writing, Dan's written it, Cobb, I think you know it. This is coming. And so you want to be out ahead of it. Basketball hadn't gotten you there. Let's see where football can do. You've won 21 games the last 2 years. You have the most money. All you got to do is beat UTSA and Navy, and you're doing what you're supposed to do, winning these conference titles and having a shot to be the Group of Five spot right now. And then maybe we'll see what happens in 2030.
Jason, we appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care, brother.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Let's go to one of our all-time favorites, Reverend Steve Kerr. On some of the Houston more explicit chants that may have triggered Draymond tonight.
Oh, God.
It's not ideal when a crowd is chanting, F you, Draymond. I would prefer if fans could use a little more discretion and remember that the guy has kids. Maybe I'm old school. I'm all for the fans cheering for their team, and if they want to yell at the opponents, great. But I think FU is just a little much. How about when Draymond flips off all the other fans? He's got kids, too.
Or what about when Draymond commits acts of violence on the court?
Yeah.
Come on now. Ugh. Get it together.
Ugh. Ugh. Want to thank Jason and Eric for being on the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.